Welcome to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. This is one of those times where it's pretty hard to talk about the music for a game without talking about the game itself. Game designer Genova Chen and that game company have released three games for Sony's PlayStation Network. This means they're downloadable games you don't actually buy a physical disc. Each game is like nothing I've ever seen or experienced. Austin Whittery wrote music for that game company's first PSN game, a game called Flow, and also for their newest, called Journey. While you can play Journey by yourself, it's designed as an anonymous two-player experience. Not long after you begin the game, you're paired up with a total stranger. Now, in normal online multiplayer experiences, you'd see a person's online moniker, but not in Journey. You can't speak to that person, and since you have no idea who they are, you can't send them a message. If you press the circle button, you can make this chime sound to each other. All you do is work together toward the goal of getting to the mountain. And yeah, it's that simple. That game company designs games for people who didn't know they like them. All of this is such a satisfying experience, and then we get to Austin's music. The best way to describe the way Austin's music works with the game is ballet. It's just like ballet. The gameplay and music are as cooperative and seamless as I've ever experienced in multimedia. If you've ever once had a fleeting thought of dabbling in console gaming, this is exactly where you start. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm delighted at last to be able to make it happen.
Yes. So how were you introduced to the concept behind Journey?
Well, about 3 years ago, Genova Chen, the creative director, he and I went to dinner. And, you know, we had worked together on Flow and were friends and had known each other for a long time. And they had just released Flower, you know, couldn't have been more than a few days before. Mm. And they were getting ready to start their next title with Sony. And so he said, you know, I want to kind of explain to you the concept. So we went to dinner and he kind of walked me through it. And everything he explained that day is essentially exactly what's in the game now. It really was, you know, all about the archetype of the hero's journey and this sort of passage from sort of through the desert towards a mountain. And so that was really pretty clear in his mind from day one.
When you talk about the hero's journey, this is from narrative theory, right? So can you talk a little bit about that at all?
It's all very deliberately based around Joseph Campbell's Hero of a Thousand Faces. And so, you know, it's kind of like the single universal story of mankind. You know, it's also referred to as the monomyth. Mm-hmm. And Genova wanted to take a, you know, relative to Flow and Flower, which were sort of semi-narrative, this game, he wanted to have the same kind of abstract emotional ideas at play, but within a more narrative concept. And so the natural conclusion, I mean, it really makes sense if you think about it. Logically, it almost seems like it would have to be the hero's journey, because you could make something that's sort of grounded in a narrative way while still remaining reasonably abstract, you know, compared to, say, Flower or Flow. Mm-hmm.
What sort of visuals did you have for you to see as you wrote?
Well, I actually was able to kind of interface with the game itself through basically the whole process.
Oh, wow.
Which was totally invaluable. So Sony hooked me up with a PlayStation test kit so I could run builds of the game as they were made. And they, you know, the systems at that game company were set up to make a build of the game every day. At the end of the day, their system would compile what everyone had done that day and add it to the build. And so first thing in the morning, I could download that and play it. So, you know, if I sent music in the afternoon, Genova or Martin or Monty at Sony or one of the guys on the team who kind of was working with me on music would code it in, and I would send instructions that would be very detailed, usually of, I think it should, you know, trigger when the player does this and it should last this long. And, you know, I had very kind of specific instructions, mm-hmm. and I'd send them a little MP3 of a mock-up, and they'd put it in, and then the next morning I'd be able to actually play the game with that music in there and see if it worked. And, wow. you know, rinse and repeat for 3 years straight.
Oh my gosh, 3 years, huh?
Yeah, it's by far the longest I've ever worked on something as a composer. It ended up being the absolute best thing. I can't imagine having done it in less time. And it's not because I needed that time for the amount of labor or the amount of minutes that had to be written or anything like that. It was because I could literally rewrite the same cue like 50 times until I was sure that it was right. Mm-hmm. And there was never any excuse to, you know, being finished was not the same as it being good. And because of the way that game company works, especially where they are highly reiterative by nature, this just let me kind of model my compositional approach on their development approach.
Musical styles would you say you blended to create Journey's sound?
It's an interesting one. Over time, it just kind of organically became Journey in my mm-hmm. in my eyes, to the point that it's sort of hard for me to articulate because it's very sort of spiritual in nature, but not in any particularly culturally specific way. Like, it mm-hmm. doesn't sound like, you know, gospel hymns or anything like that, even though you could call that spiritual. It was really a matter of whittling away specific cultural connotations. You know, being a desert landscape, you know, of course, one of the first places that you kind of go, which is horrendously cliche, is the kind of, you know, Arabic flavored percussion or maybe more of a Lawrence of Arabia kind of thing or something. And certainly the score doesn't sound like any of those, but we, of course, tried everything in that kind of time span. And so, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm somehow kind of not answering your question, but it's hard for me to describe. I mean, there's a lot of electronics in it, and in their own way, you know, I suspect people will kind of refer to it the same way they did Flow, which was, people called that New Age music, which was never entered into my mind while writing it. And generally speaking, I'm not actually a big fan of what you would call New Age music. I wouldn't call it that, but I wouldn't say someone is wrong to say that either. It's obviously very performance-oriented. These cello solos and harp solos and my other soloists, like the flute and bass flute, and, of course, the orchestra itself, you know, it's really performance-oriented around what they brought to it.
That's funny you said bass flute. I was going to ask you if it was alto flute because it just is so beautiful, but it's a bass flute, huh?
It is, yeah. The what you hear it in the trailer very prominently. And then all through the score, the bass flute is used as sort of a symbol of your connection with the sort of spirit world, you could say. There's these moments. Have you had a chance to play the game?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay, great. Beautiful. So, you know, there's these sort of tall white yes. versions of you, which are sort of like spirit guides or whatever you want to call them. So the bass flute is very deliberately kind of symbolic of them.
Okay.
And so if ever you hear it, if in my eyes, that was me trying to sort of evoke them, even if they weren't actually present. So, yeah, I love that instrument.
And, it's amazing.
You know, the girl who played it, Amy Tatum, is someone I've worked with for many years and just love not just the sound of the instrument, but the way she plays it really, to me, is just immensely inspiring. It's very easy to write music when you know someone like that will be playing it.
love the and this kind of speaks to that, this balance that you have throughout the score of chamber music and full orchestra. So you'll single out a handful of instruments to interact. Maybe it's the harp and the bass flute, or maybe it's cello and whatever. And you do this throughout the score. But Threshold is the name of the track that really stuck out in my head, where there's all these kind of, you know, very intimate moments, and then the orchestra will come back in.
You're definitely correct. It is sort of an interplay between the small and the large. And that is, you know, that's a mirror of the structure of the game. You are this lone, powerless soul person on a gigantic landscape. And so, you know, I wanted the player to feel as sort of lonely and isolated as possible. So the score starts off completely 100% electronic with, you know, these sort of more textural ideas where the musical DNA of, like, the theme, for example, is very hidden and very below the surface by design, so that, you know, you really have a long way to go before you actually reach that mountain. So the cello is the one constant, because that's you. I mean, it's like the cello is basically the symbol of you. If the bass flute are the sort of ancestor figures, the cello is you. And the orchestra, the presence of the orchestra, you could think of as symbolic of your kind of increasing sense of purpose and direction in the world, so that it's a fairly linear growth of the orchestra from the game's beginning to the end, where by the end, or like the end credits, is essentially orchestral music straightforwardly, but we take our time very slowly to get there. So yeah, it's very much by design to kind of match the narrative arc of the game at large.
Sam was over, and he almost never plays the games that we end up doing interviews about. But Journey, I knew he could play, because Flow and Flower and Journey are all games that are just designed for anybody can pick it up and do it. And it allowed me to just sit back and listen to how the music developed throughout the game. What a great opportunity to be able to, like, write this score.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I've definitely seen the reviews where people have had varying opinions about the length of it. Mm-hmm. Part of me is like, well, you know, are you surprised by this? I mean, Flo and Flower were not, you know, any longer. And the really glowing reviews have said, you know, they've either said it's the perfect length, or they've gone a step further and said, anybody that complains about the length is not connecting with the game the right way,
right,
or like the way that it's probably intended, or the way that I did, if nothing else. You know, I know that game company is always very hesitant, and I include myself in this philosophy, to kind of dictate how one should experience something or how they shouldn't. And if the length is an issue to them, then so be it. That's their right. But the reviews have basically, the ones that seem to really get what we were trying to say and really, you know, connected with it and resonated mm-hmm. with it, have all tended to say, you know, we think basically 3 hours or 2 hours, or however long you want to spend in it. Never mind the fact that you can replay it a bunch, and it's very experiential, which means that it really isn't about the destination, which means that there's almost no such thing as length in the game, in a sort of super philosophical way of looking at it. But
yeah.
Never mind all that. You know, in theory, a 2 or 3 hour experience that it has no wasted space or no dead air, no filler, should be hopefully worth the time and money that you invest in it.
Yeah.
For me as a gamer, as a consumer, pretending that I had nothing to do with the game, this to me is like a dream game. You know, as the thing unfolded every single day for 3 years, it never wore off. I just kept thinking, how am I this lucky? This is the most incredible. If I just were to see this come out, I would think to myself, you know, God, I would have given anything to work on that because it brings such eloquence to gaming. And I feel so in awe of that game company. I feel I can safely praise the game without that being a weird backhanded praise of myself, because
yeah.
I'm just so reverential of what they do that I feel a certain separation from it. Like, I couldn't take any of the credit for the actual final product. Reductive approach, you know, you take away as much as you can so that just a little bit will go a long way. And obviously a lot of games, you know, your sort of big spectacle kind of games, which would be your majority of games, and I love those and buy all those too, but they tend to approach it in the same way like a Michael Bay film would, which is that to create a sense of awe and wonder, it's like this arms race of just how much bigger and crazier can we get.
Yeah.
And theoretically at some point that will reach a ceiling. Journey, I just thought it was a really smart choice on Genova's part and Kelly and Robin, you know, that game company in general, to make, you know, such a commitment to a less is more aesthetic.
Session was pretty special. Can you talk about how that worked? Because you weren't physically there with the orchestra, right?
Correct. I had planned on it. You know, I traditionally will always conduct my own music, and that's for me one of the real highlights of any project is I just love that interaction with the musicians, and it's a very kind of meaningful experience. And Sony had offered to fly me. We were recording the orchestra in Macedonia, but because of the nature of this project, I found myself having to decide, do I want a couple more days to continue to compose and to, reiterate on these and really just get them perfect? Or would I rather take those few days to go out there just simply to conduct? So, you know, I just sort of very last second said, you know, I'm going to stay and keep writing because we can transfer all the files to them the night before and then we'll be ready to go. Whereas if I actually went, it would be, you know, a week in advance basically to get everything squared away and to go out there and try to not be jet lagged. And it ends up being much more taxing than it seems like it should be, but you lose quite a lot of time on a flight like that. So yeah, we made the decision to record remote, which I had done before and was totally comfortable with, although never with this orchestra. But I had become pretty familiar with them, and I was, you know, their contractor's name is Laurent Kolpitz, and he and I had been sort of talking about it and planning the sessions for well over a year. And he would send me the latest recordings that they were doing, and so I could play to their strengths, you know, and they're, because they're a new ensemble, and it's a new kind of endeavor for them there in Skopje in Macedonia. And so Journey's now kind of their flagship claim to fame.
Oh, cool.
Because they've done a lot of other projects, but Journey's been getting a lot of attention for them, which I was happy about. They, you know, they really poured their heart into it, and their conductor, Oleg Kontradenko, he and I got on a sort of Skype video chat a few days before and went through every single measure of music. And I walked through and would say, okay, now this cue, this, you know, I'd explain to him, like, okay, this is I call this the oasis. It's an area on the slope of the mountain where it's sort of like a little safe harbor. And, you know, you'll notice in bar 7, the violins have, I think we can do a little portamento. And, you know, we walked through in micro detail, literally every wow. note of everything we were going to be recording. And he was taking a lot of notes, and he's also a pretty talented violinist, and so he had all kinds of ideas for the strings as well, and he did just a beautiful job. It was just across the board really excellent experience.
The cellist you worked with. Her first name is Tina, but I don't know how to say her last name.
Her last name is Guo.
Okay. Because you've worked with her before, right?
Oh, yeah, a gazillion times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so just wonderful for me to see her career just explode in the last few years. I mean, she's become quite the notorious sort of rock star. We started on Journey 3 years ago, and I had worked with her already extensively before that. Like, I had a film a few years ago at Sundance called Grace, and she's featured heavily in that score. You know, just a billion other little things and, like, TV commercials that I had done and all sorts of stuff. And she's just one of these people that I turn to often. But in the case of Journey, the first day, Genova said, come up with a musical idea for the score, a theme. And so I, you know, that day came up with this piece and recorded it. And that's actually, that recording is what you hear in the trailer that we released like 2 years later. It was that actual thing from that first day, which I never anticipated. I didn't really know what was going to become of it. And it's not actually in the game verbatim like that. But nonetheless, you know, I recorded her that day in my studio, and I knew she was going to be at the core of this thing the whole time. And it was amazing because during the project, her career started to really take flight. And, you know, Hans Zimmer pulled her in and featured her on a bunch of solos in Sherlock Holmes and Inception.
Oh, wow.
And she's a featured soloist now as an electric cellist on the Cirque du Soleil program called Immortal, which is all Michael Jackson music that's on tour all over the country and then all over the world, which ended up making it kind of tricky to get all, because I recorded her kind of periodically throughout the process. We didn't do it all in one big go at the end, as like we did with the orchestra, for example. She would be in town for like 24 hours before shipping off to, you know, Tampa or something to go play another Cirque show. And so I'd say, can you just come over for like an hour? And we just squeeze in little things here and there. And just like I was saying before about the bass flute, it's extremely easy to write music, I think, when I'm able to kind of know who's going to play it, and I'm incredibly inspired by them. And Tina's one of the most just monstrously talented musicians I've ever met. You know, I wanted to really show what she can do. In fact, if you look on YouTube, there's a piece that I did called Woven Variations. To the casual observer, it looks like it's basically a suite of music from Journey, but it's actually not, because Journey's, first off, it's scored for traditional orchestra. It's essentially a cello concerto. It's a tiny one. It's like 9 minutes, but it's handled that way. So it's cello soloist with standard orchestra, which is not Journey at all. Journey is heavily electronic, and the real orchestral component is really winds and strings. There's no orchestral brass or, you know, standard orchestral percussion like timpani or snare drum or anything. That would have been like really inorganic to the world of Journey. But this piece, you know, is a separate kind of entity, and the sort of core DNA of it comes from Journey, but it's really its own thing. And plus, I wrote it a year before finishing the actual score. And so there's like moments referenced in it that ended up getting cut from my final score of the game. And then there's other moments in the final score of the game that were directly influenced by Woven Variations, including from a development standpoint on that game company, because they all came to the premiere.
Then
there was this one moment, the way I ended the piece, they all were like, huh, that gives us an idea. And they ended up kind of designing a moment in the game. I don't want to give any specifics away in terms of spoilers or anything, but there's a moment in the game that they ended up kind of designing around the way I had handled Woven Variations. And so it was this weird thing, like a snake eating its tail, you know, where I wrote a concert piece based on an in-progress score that ended up influencing the in-progress score. It was a really bizarre, I'd never had anything like that happen before.
Sang at the end?
The singer is Lisbeth Scott, who's another one of these, you know, musicians that I just feel so grateful to work with, and who's so talented. And she's sung on a bazillion great scores. You know, my favorite is probably a piece called Remember Munich from John Williams' score to Munich. That's the most just haunting solo, and it's her live with the orchestra, not overdubbed, not in a vocal booth, but live in the hall with the orchestra. And it's her first take that's in the film. To me, it's just haunting. But she's got a gazillion. I mean, she's all over Avatar, and she's all over pretty much all of Harry Gregson Williams, like the Narnia scores and things like that. And And so I'd worked with her for a number of years. We did a film called Captain Abu Ra'ed together, which was the world's first Jordanian film that I did back in 2007 that ended up actually winning the audience award at Sundance.
And right.
So she sang on that, and we connected on that. And then when it came time to do Journey, I knew she had to be a part of it, but I wasn't actually sure what form it would take. So the main way that you hear her in the game is actually the little sort of singing sounds that you make as a that when you know how you can like call to other players.
Yeah,
I actually sampled her one note at a time and sort of built those sounds around her voice so that she and you are one and the same. But it emerges slowly, so you only really sense that there's a actual human being in the core of that sound because it's very electronic and there's also cello in it and flute in it and other things. Plus, the sound designer at Sony, Steve Johnson, you know, he did a lot of amazing work by adding kind of birds and things like that to the sound so that it really had an animal-like quality but doesn't really sound like anything.
Yeah.
But if you play, like, towards the end of the game especially, you can really hear her voice in those pitches. And that was my initial idea of kind of the way I would use her. I didn't want the sort of moaning solo singer in the score because she's done that sort of thing, you know, like she's all over Passion of the Christ, for example, doing that sort of a thing.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't really want, it just didn't feel like Journey to do that sort of approach. But then, yeah, of course, the idea for the end credit sort of song or aria or whatnot came along at some point. And that ended up pretty much being the last thing I wrote because I was terrified. I thought, you know, like it's going to be really easy to make something really awful and just cheesy. And, you know, she also elevates it, so I can kind of get away with murder.
Oftentimes, I interview composers who write basically a balance of like combat music and cinematics, and there are frequently some ambient tracks in there. But as I was listening to Journey, and you know, to me, it made me think less in terms of specifics like combat music or whatever. And I was thinking of it more in like, here's this restful music, and here's this music that makes me dance in a way, you know?
I definitely did not think of the game in terms of the traditional approach, like combat. I mean, obviously there's no combat in the game, but I didn't really think of it in terms of game state, where now you're in the agitated state, now you're in this. The whole idea is that it's supposed to just unfold organically around you. You know, my ultimate dream score for a game is one that is so effortlessly adaptive to the game experience that it just seems as though it's being composed in real time and right in front of you. You know, I don't know if I achieved that, but I worked very hard towards that goal. And I think there's at the very least, there are some moments in the game that create that illusion where the music just seems to just happen. And if you stop, it's not that it stops, but it doesn't keep going,
if that
even makes sense.
Yeah.
But from a narrative standpoint, it just does whatever you want to do. Because the music, you know, I only wrote maybe an hour. And I mean, it depends on how you define it because it's so interactive. There's so many variations that it's more than an hour of music, but it wasn't about the actual quantity. It was about making it as seamless to the experience as possible. It's funny that you said dancing because that was a word Genova used a lot. He really wanted the movement in the game to feel very dance-like and almost ballet-like.
Especially when you get to interact with another player, it is, very much.
Yeah, you know, for me, I told him, not really musically, but visually and emotionally, like one of the big early inspirations for me in the game was the scene in WALL-E when they're on the when the like captain of the big sort of humanity, you know, Noah's Ark thing, he says define dancing, and he's looking it up while they're having their kind of dancing moment outside in space in zero gravity.
Yeah.
And just sort of the incredible beauty of that. I just loved that moment. That to me was like, I loved that movie, and that was the highlight moment of the whole thing. And certainly what Thomas Newman wrote there was gorgeous, and I didn't model anything from Journey on that, but the emotional quality of the scene as a whole, including how the music was applied to it, was an inspiration for me in that aspect of Journey. I really wanted there to be that just sort of sense of effortless beauty. Thank you. ironically, you know, we're all gamers and we're making a game, but like, the, you know, at any point, if things felt gamey to us, we felt like we were doing it wrong. And it was a strange thing, the way our senses kind of recalibrated, where if it felt like we were having to use our skills as gamers to accomplish something, it didn't feel right. Because that game company's whole philosophy is, we make games for people that don't know they love games. We're not trying to appeal to the hardcore gamers who would play a game like Mass Effect 3 and spend those 40 hours or whatever it takes to get through it. And I'm one of those guys, I mean, especially in that case, because I loved the first two ravenously. But I am, as such, not really the target market of a game like Journey. I mean, but the thing is, I love it. I appreciate it. As a hardcore gamer, I really appreciate it. But nonetheless, like, my wife played through start to finish last night, and that 2.5 hours or whatever was like the most continuous time she's probably ever played a game.
Yeah.
And she did it, you know, and it wasn't really a struggle for her. And she actually was able to really kind of interact with players and like learn things about herself, you know, where she was saying like there was one area of the game where she just really wanted to kind of just exist. But when she ended up linking with somebody, they were eager to like, hey, let's go, let's keep exploring. And she got very frustrated and was like, no, you know, I don't, like, I'm content here. And so she kind of deliberately left that person to be able to just experience. And it was a very kind of introspective moment. I was able to connect on Twitter with someone that we were, like, when it shows you at the end who you played with. I was able to spot, someone tweeted me, like, right in that moment. Like, they finished the game, and then they tweeted, you know, Austin, I loved the score, thank you so much. And I recognized their Twitter name was the same as the person that was, like, on my screen at that moment as who I had just played. So I was like, I think I just played with you. And they wrote, oh, no way! And it was really funny.
What a great moment when you get to that point in the game where you see someone for the first time.
That was their goal all along. And, you know, for the longest time, despite how long I was working on it, I didn't experience that for like 90% of it because I wasn't able to access the network from my studio. So in order to do multiplayer, I would have to go down to their offices. And because the music changes based on multiplayer. And there are instruments like the harp solo, which you don't hear ever if you play the game 100% single player.
Interesting.
And so I wanted there to be a whole other aspect to it so that it was musically quite different. You know, like in that piece Threshold, for example, the moment that corresponds to in the game, like it's all included on the actual soundtrack, but in game, for example, you know, the first time you sort of interact with one of the little fish creatures, as I think of them, the little sort of kite dogs. You know, it comes out and we get this wonderful little flute solo that it's wonderful playing from Amy Tatum. But if you're networked with somebody, it ends up being a duet between Amy and Rodney, the viola player. And it's very different if you're alone or not. I wanted the game to feel satisfying one way, but then have kind of this X factor in the score in multiplayer, which to me is the real way to experience the game.
Absolutely.
I mean, it really, it's the ideal way. I think it is a better experience for me, if nothing else, that way.
I do hope that we have another opportunity to cross paths. And if I didn't say this, I just love your music. It's beautiful.
Thank you for that. It's a really wonderful thing to say. And I really appreciate that a lot. I feel very grateful to be able to write music and to also work on projects that are so sort of stimulating and different and interesting and the kind of thing that as a gamer I really respond to.
You've been listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese, and our technical director is Sam Keenan. We had additional technical support from Cameron the Catman Wiley and KPCC Studios in Pasadena.
Darren Korb is on our next episode. He wrote the music for the hit indie game Bastion. If you'd like to help support Top Score, you can become a member of Classical Minnesota Public Radio at minnesotapublicradio.org. If you have comments or questions, you can send us feedback at classicalmpr.org/topscore, or you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Top Score Podcast. Okay, let me try and read it down really quick. All right, hang on. Welcome to... You're gonna hate it. Minty fresh. That was a just kidding. All right, let me try it one more time. Well, do you hate it so far?
I don't hate it.
Can I go now?